Yes, this is Ms. G, back finally with a voice. And I'm bringing you Telling Tales here tonight at 104.3 in Juneau, Alaska. And tonight's story I have picked for all of us to enjoy is by Mr. Ray Bradbury. And it's called In a Season of Calm Weather. It's a story he did in 1957. So I'll let you get settled and I'll be right back with more Telling Tales. Please stay tuned. This is Ms. G, bringing you Telling Tales here tonight, 104.3 FM in Juneau, Alaska, from KTOO. Tonight's story by Mr. Ray Bradbury, In a Season of Calm Weather, done in January 1957. George and Alice Smith detrained at Biarritz one summer noon and in an hour had run through their hotel, onto the beach, into the ocean, and back out to bake upon the sand. To see George Smith sprawled burning there, you'd think him only a tourist, flown fresh as iced lettuce to Europe and soon to be transshipped home. But here was a man who loved art more than life itself. There, George Smith sighed. Another ounce of perspiration trickled down his chest. Boil out the Ohio tap water, he thought. Then drink down the best Bordeaux. Filch your blood with rich French sediment so you'll see with native eyes. Why? Why eat, breathe, drink everything French? So that given time he might really begin to understand the genius of one man. His mouth moved, forming a name. George, his wife loomed over him. I know what you've been thinking. I can read your lips. He lay perfectly still, waiting. And? Picasso, she said. He winced. Someday she would learn to pronounce that name. Please, she said, relax. I know you heard this rumor this morning, but you should see your eyes. Your tick is back. All right, Picasso's here. Down the coast a few miles, visiting friends in some small fishing town. But you must forget it, or our vacation's ruined. I wish I'd never heard the rumor, he said honestly. If only, she said, you liked other painters. Others? Yes, there were others. He could breakfast most congenially on Caravaggio, still lifes of autumn pears and midnight plums. For lunch, those fire-squirting, thick-wormed Van Gogh sunflowers, those blooms a blind man might read with one rush of scorched fingers down fiery canvas. But the great feast? The paintings he saved his palette for, there, feeling the horizon like Neptune risen, crowned with lime weed, alabaster, coral, paintbrushes, clenched like tridents and horn-nailed fists, and with fishtail vast enough to fluke summer showers out over all Gibraltar. Who else but the creator of Girl before Amelia and Guernica? Alice, he said patiently, how can I explain? Coming down on the train, I thought, good Lord, it's all Picasso country. But was it really, he wondered. the sky, the land, the people, the flushed pink bricks here, scrolled electric blue ironwork balconies there, a mandolin ripe as a fruit in some man's thousand fingerprinting hands, billboard tatters blowing like confetti in night winds. How much was Picasso? How much George Smith staring around the world with wild Picasso eyes? He despaired of answering. That old man had distilled turpentines and linseed oil so thoroughly through George Smith that they shaped his being all blue period at twilight, all rose period at dawn. I keep thinking, he said aloud, if we saved our money, we'll never have $5,000. I know, he said quietly. But it's nice thinking we might bring it off someday. Wouldn't it be great to just step up to him and say, Pablo, here's $5,000. Give us the sea, the sand, that sky, or any old thing you want. We'll be happy. After a moment, his wife touched his arm. I think you'd better go in the water now, she said. Yes, he said, I'd better do just that. White fire showered up where he cut the waves. During the afternoon, George Smith came out and went into the ocean with the vast spilling motions of now warm, now cool people who, at last, with the sun's decline, their bodies all lobster colors and colors of broiled squab and guinea hen, trudge for their wedding cake hotels. The beach lay deserted for endless mile on mile, save for two people. One was George Smith, a towel over shoulder, out for a last devotional. Far along the shore, another, shorter, square-cut man walked alone in the tranquil weather. He was deeply tanned, his close-shaven head dyed almost mahogany by the sun, and his eyes were clear and bright as water in his face. So the shoreline stage was set, and in a few minutes the two men would meet. And once again, fate fixed the scales for shocks and surprises, arrivals and departures. And all the while, these two solitary strollers did not for a moment think on coincidence. That unswum stream which lingers at man's elbow with every crowd in every town. Nor did they ponder the fact that if man dares dip into that stream, he grabs a wonder in each hand. Like most, they shrugged at such folly and stayed well up the bank lest fate should shove them in. The stranger stood alone. Glancing about, he saw his aloneness, saw the waters of the lovely bay, saw the sun sliding down the late colors of the day, and then, half turning, spied a small wooden object on the sand. It was no more than the slender stick from a lime ice cream delicacy long since melted away. Smiling, he picked the stick up. With another glance around to reinsure his solitude, the man stooped again and, holding the stick gently with light sweeps of his hand, began to do the one thing in all the world he knew best how to do. He began to draw incredible figures along the sand. He sketched one figure and then moved over, and still looking down, completely focused on his work now, drew a second and a third figure, and after that a fourth and a fifth and a sixth. George Smith, printing the shoreline with his feet, gazed here, gazed there, and then saw the man ahead. George Smith, drawing nearer, saw that the man, deeply tanned, was bending down. Nearer yet, it was obvious what the man was up to. George Smith chuckled. Of course, alone on the beach, this man, how old, 65, 70, was scribbling and doodling away. How the sand flew. How the wild portraits flung themselves out there on the shore. How George Smith took one more step and stopped, very still. The stranger was drawing and drawing and did not seem to sense that anyone stood immediately behind him and the world of his drawings in the sand. By now he was so deeply enchanted with his solitudinous creation that death bombs set off in the bay might not have stopped his flying hand nor turned him around. George Smith looked down at the sand, and after a long while looking, he began to tremble. For there on the flat shore were pictures of Grecian lions and Mediterranean goats and maidens with flesh of sand like powdered gold and satyrs piping on hand-carved horns and children dancing, strewing flowers along and along the beach with lambs gamboling after and musicians skipping to their harps and lyres and unicorns racing youths toward distant meadows, woodlands, ruined temples, and volcanoes. Along the shore in a never-broken line, the hand, the wooden stylus of this man, bent down in fever and raining perspiration, scribbled, ribboned, looped around, over and up, across, in, out, stitched, whispered, stayed, then hurried on, as if this traveling bacchanal must flourish to its end before the sun was put out by the sea. 20, 30 yards or more, the nymphs and druids and summer fonts sprung up in unrivaled hieroglyph. And the sand in the dying light was the color of molten copper, on which was now slashed a message that any man in any time might read and savor down the years. Everything whirled and poised in its own wind and gravity. Now wine was being crushed from under the great blooded feet of dancing vintners' daughters. Now steaming seas gave birth to coin-sheathed monsters, while flowered kites strode scent on blowing clouds. Now. The artist stopped. George Smith drew back and stood away. The artist glanced up, surprised to find someone so near. Then he simply stood there, looking from George Smith to his own creations, flung like idle footprints down the way. He smiled at last and shrugged as if to say, "Look what I've done. See what a child. You will forgive me, won't you? One day or another we are all fools. You too, perhaps. So allow an old fool this, eh? Good, good." But George Smith could only look at the little man with the sun-dark skin and the clear, sharp eyes and say the man's name once in a whisper to himself. They stood thus for perhaps another 5 seconds, George Smith staring at the sand freeze and the artist watching George Smith with amused curiosity. George Smith opened his mouth, closed it, put out his hand, took it back. He stepped toward the pictures, stepped away. Then he moved along the line of figures, like a man viewing a precious series of marbles cast up from some ancient ruin on the shore. His eyes did not blink. His hand wanted to touch it, but did not dare to touch. He wanted to run, but did not run. He looked suddenly at the hotel. Run. Yes, run. What? Grab a shovel. Dig, excavate, save a chunk of this all-too-crumbling sand. Find a repairman, race him back here with plaster of Paris to cast a mold of some fragile part of these. No, silly. Or, his eyes flicked to his hotel window, the camera. Run, get it, get back, and hurry along the shore, clicking, changing film, clicking until George Smith whirled to face the sun. It burned faintly on his face. His eyes were two small fires from it. The sun was half underwater as he watched. It sank the rest of the way in a matter of seconds. The artist had drawn nearer and now was gazing into George Smith's face with great friendliness, as if he were guessing every thought. Now he was nodding, his head in a little bow. Now the ice cream stick had fallen casually from his fingers. Now he was saying good night. Good night. Now he was gone, walking back down the beach toward the south. George Smith stood looking after him. After a full minute, he did the only thing he could possibly do. He started at the beginning of the fantastic frieze of satyrs and fauns and wine-dipped maidens and prancing unicorns and piping youths, and he walked slowly along the shore. He walked a long way, looking down at the free-running bacchanal. And when he came to the end of the animals and men, he turned around and started back in the other direction, just staring down, as if he had lost something and did not quite know where to find it. He kept on doing this until there was no more light in the sky or on the sand to see by. He sat down at the supper table. "You're late," said his wife. "I just had to come down alone. I'm ravenous." "That's all right," he said. "Anything interesting happen on your walk?" she asked. "No," he said. "You look funny. George, you didn't swim out too far, did you, and almost drown? I can tell by your face." "You did swim out too far, didn't you?" "Yes," he said. "Well," she said, watching him closely, "don't ever do that again. Now, what do you have?" He picked up the menu and started to read it and stopped suddenly. "What's wrong?" asked his wife. He turned his head and shut his eyes for a moment. "Listen." She listened. "I don't hear anything," she said. "Don't you?" "No, what is it?" "Just the tide," he said after a while, sitting there, his eyes still shut. "Just the tide coming in." That was Mr. Ray Bradbury's "In a Season of Calm Weather." This is Ms. G with Telling Tales here tonight at 104.3 at KTO in Juneau, Alaska. Hope you enjoyed that story. I'll be right back, so stay tuned. Hey there, this is Ms. G, bringing you Telling Tales here tonight at KTOO. I hope you enjoyed that last story. I really enjoyed playing it, or reading it, and playing it for you. And now we have a little time, so I wanted to read a couple of poems, maybe three if we have enough time. I was lucky enough to be introduced to some of our poets here in town, and get to go to a few of the slams. So I picked up one of their books by Mr. William Merck called Bright Silence. And there's one of many of his poems I really enjoy, and I wanted to share that with you. This is called One Afternoon by William Merck. Looking up from my book, I find an old man dancing in the street, gray, white hair shaved back to his skull, pale blue shirt open to spring's fine weather. His large feet shuffle back and forth, to the sounds of private music, his face all smiles, arms waving quick through the air. Several strangers approaching his corner turn their heads to study each other's eyes. A few friends stare from the porch of his house. Safe among the blossoms of new rhododendrons, yet this man I've never seen before continues with his rocking dance, smiling quietly in satisfaction, as a man will do when he knows a trail is good and that the sun is here to stay. It hasn't rained for nearly a week. Large handfuls of greening leaf move slowly in this breeze off the sand. Fresh clover spills across the neighbor's yard, and just like that, in this vicarious moment of private dance, all those thoughts of my life that seemed so god-awful important when I rolled out of bed this morning are lost, waltzed away beneath the heels of an old man's feet. That's William Merck's One Afternoon. Thank you, Mr. Bill. And while I'm at it, I had another poem I wanted to share with you. This is by Christy Naime Erickson. It's called Bent, and it's for John. The truth is, I've never folded 1,000 paper cranes, unless you count every time one of us was picked last in gym class, every time we choked on our own names, every time our mothers got drunk and we forgot. If you count every time we folded in half, every time her heart showed too much skin, every time he used poetry to say goodbye, you would know what I know. That we think we are too thin to hold ourselves up, but we take shape for each other. We are corners, we are wings, and every 1,000 I make more or less the same wish. Brother, believe me when I tell you how bent and beautiful you are. That was Bent for John by Christy Naime Erickson. This is Telling Tales with Ms. G, and I'll be right back. Please stay tuned. This is Ms. G, back with you. So, I had one more poem, and then I'm going to have to leave you to let you listen to some wonderful music. I hope you like the song you've been listening to. It's called Over the Horizon. Unfortunately, I do not know who the author is, or the artist. It's actually something on my, it came with my tablet. So, this poem I really liked as well. And this one is from Songs That Shake the Earth, collection of poems from the Wush Kinai Die artist. And it's by Mr. Craig Scaffolstead. And it's called Mad Libs, Feel in Words. Sometimes I wake up naked in front of the mirror with nothing but a headband made from bear ears on my head. And all I can think is, man, I feel bare, / bare. But not the definitions. No, I don't feel naked or the need to frolic in garbage. I just feel the word. I feel in words. Sometimes people ask me how I'm doing, and I tell them, I feel purple. Or yesterday was pretty savvy. Today is kind of petrichor. Because those words, the way they sound, means more to me than any proper word usage. Some nights, I make sentences that lack sense. Super strife is only fine after five, but silly solo cups stand fine straight in two lines, leaning briskly from a fur coat atop a tree. There's no point to it, but I'm not a definition smith. I'm a wordsmith. The words come first, just the words. Sometimes I want to tell you that your shirt is spelunking, or your eyes are indubitably. Because I savor the sound and the look and the appeal of the word long before I care about the definition. Grammar, sense, it only matters to make it proper when I'm trying to get the message across. But sometimes, just to mess with people, I'll make a little slip and tell them, various dubiousness attacks a feral goldfish suffering syphilis at the best alumni blowout birthday bash that's ever been. That was Mr. Craig Scaffolstead's Mad Libs, Feel in Words. So, I hope you enjoyed this show tonight, Telling Tales with Ms. G. Here at KTO 104.3 FM in Juneau, Alaska, I've enjoyed giving you stories tonight. So, till next time, good night.